Go to Ecclesiastes chapter 11 this morning. Ecclesiastes chapter 11. We've reached the conclusion to the book of Ecclesiastes. It's a two-chapter conclusion, chapters 11 and 12. So we'll probably finish it just about the time that school is starting. We've been brought face to face in Ecclesiastes with the distressing reality that much about life we don't understand. Beyond not understanding it, Ecclesiastes has reminded us that we don't control it. We may understand it, but we're not in control. We don't understand much about God and His plans, Solomon has told us, and we certainly don't control God. So we're left with a lot of uncertainties, a lot of unknowns. How can we live wisely, appropriately, when there's so much that we don't understand about life? We like to figure things out before we plunge into them, don't we? Most of us like to have a plan. We like to figure out, okay, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. And we don't want to step into something if we're unsure of what the results are going to be. But Solomon has reminded us that we are very unsure about most of the results of life here on this sin-cursed planet. So how can we live when we don't understand so much about life? Well, as human beings respond different ways. I've listed on your handout there in your bulletin about seven different ways people respond, and there are certainly other responses, but these are seven pretty typical responses. I've given these poor individuals names, hopefully that make it a little bit more memorable and amusing. But I think it accurately reflects how we see people respond in the book of Ecclesiastes through Solomon's responses and how we see people respond in other parts of Scripture. First fellow I'll call Idle Ian. Idle Ian looks at the uncertainties of life and sees that he doesn't know whether he's going to be a success or a failure in life. He doesn't know whether his business ventures are going to turn out. So Idle Ian decides, well, if God is sovereign and God is in control, then I'll just relax and take it easy. So he enjoys the easy life because he figures it's not going to make a difference if he does anything otherwise. So Idle Ian retreats into inactivity. We might also call it laziness. Second is Pleasure Pete. Now, I tried to pick names that had nothing to do with anybody in here. If this is your middle name, I'm so sorry. I have no idea. I tried to pick not obscure names, but names that had nothing to do with people in here. Pleasure Pete, he decides that life is short. I can't control it. It's full of frustration, so I've got to milk it for everything that it's worth. I don't know what's going to happen, but I sure know I can have a good time. Life is short, so have fun. And I've never met a Christian that would tell me that that was their philosophy of life, but I've met many Christians that was their philosophy of life. It's hard to admit. Let me encourage you when you're on vacation. Just because you're on vacation doesn't make Sunday not the Lord's Day anymore. Sunday is always the Lord's Day, whether you're here in Calgary or whether you're away from your home church. You may say, well, there's not a good church than where we're planning to go on vacation. Then choose a different spot to go on vacation so that you can honor the Lord even on vacation. Pleasure Pete lives for fun. Idle Ian relaxes in inactivity. Timid Tina. What does timid Tina do? Well, she isolates herself in fear. He, if we could come up with a guy's name, isolates himself in fear. I don't know what's going to happen. It's uncertain, so I must be cautious. I don't want to fail, so I'm not going to step out and try something, or I don't want to get hurt. I've got to protect myself. So their way of trying to control life is to isolate themselves in fear. That's timid Tina. And many people in the world take that response. How about arrogant Andy? There's nothing timid about him. He pushes on in pride. Arrogant Andy says, with my talent and hard work, I can beat the odds. I will not fail. If I just work hard enough, I can live the Canadian dream. And he's going to push through, and he thinks he can succeed. Then it's very proud, very proud. Next fella, type of person, I'll call Angry Adam. He's come face to face with the reality that he's not in control. Maybe in his midlife, as he begins to degenerate a little bit physically and lose some of the strength that he had. Some people might call it a midlife crisis, but he might lash out in anger. This isn't right, and I don't like it. And he ends up going into anger, and then if he doesn't deal with it, it ends up in bitterness, and he ends up a very miserable, awful person because he's angry that he's not in control. Ultimately, Angry Adam is upset with God. Another type of person I'll call Manipulating Michelle. And her way of dealing with life is to, when life feels like it's spinning out of control, grab on harder. Get more and more intense. These people get very manipulative with their kids and grandkids. They don't like something, they're going to punish people or get angry at people or control people. They're going to try and manipulate the circumstances because their motto is, I must keep control. Well, that's a very hard thing to do when you're not God. And so they become very frustrated and angry. Perfectionistic people are often people who end up depressed. Because you realize life doesn't usually go the way I want it to on a sin-cursed earth. And that's why I've closed our introduction here this morning with a type of person I'll call Depressed Daisy. And usually what'll happen is people will try the first six ways of dealing with life. And when they come face to face, well, that didn't work either. So where do they end up? They often end up as depressed daisies. They despair of hope. Depressed Daisy throws up her arms and says, what's the point? This isn't what I bargained for. Let me ask you, do you see yourself in any one of those seven, or see elements of any one of those seven? And if so, the message is for you this morning. And it's for me. Those are all unwise responses to the reality that there's much we don't understand or control about life. How then should we respond wisely to all the uncertainties of life? Is there a way to live without falling into one of these ditches? Is there a narrow path that we can go that is not only joyful, very rewarding and God-honoring? I'm glad you asked, because there is. Ecclesiastes chapter 11. Solomon writes in the beginning of the conclusion of the book, cast your bread on the surface of the waters, for you will find it after many days. Divide your portion to seven or even to eight, for you do not know what misfortune may occur on the earth. The clouds are full, they pour out rain upon the earth, and whether a tree falls toward the south or toward the north, wherever the tree falls, there it lies. And you say, yeah, what's the point? He who watches the wind will not sow. He who looks at the clouds will not reap. Just as you don't know the path of the wind and how bones are formed in the womb of the pregnant woman, so you do not know the activity of God who makes all things. So sow your seed in the morning. Don't be idle in the evening, or you don't know whether morning or evening sowing will succeed, or whether both of them alike will be good. The conclusion really can be divided into three parts, 11, 1 to 6, then the rest of chapter 11 down through chapter 12 and verse 7, and then the last few verses of chapter 12. And in each of these sections of the conclusion, Solomon's going to drive home one main idea in each of those sections. So what's the big idea he's driving at in verses 1 to 6 of chapter 11, the first part of the conclusion? Well, rather than me just stating it outright for you, though if you look at your handout, you can, I realize. But let's uncover it together as we explore these six verses this morning. He says, cast your bread on the surface of the waters, for you will find it after many days. Now, their flat bread in Bible times could float. You say, well, I understand the picture, but what's the point of the picture? What's the point of this proverb? Some people believe that it refers to being generous with those who are less fortunate, and that's certainly a possibility. But I think Solomon's focus here is on business as a picture for how the rest of life operates. So for you businessmen here, he says, send away your bread on the surface of the waters. I think the picture is Solomon may be visualizing him sending out his trading ships. 1 Kings chapter 9, verses 26 to 28, and chapter 10, verse 22, remind us of Solomon's business ventures, where he would send out his trading ships, and they would be gone, some of them, for 3 years. And during that 3 years, Solomon didn't know what was going to happen. He's casting his bread, so to speak. He's putting his resources out on the water, not knowing whether it will come back to him or not. But his ships, some of them would come back 3 years later with gold and silver and ivory and apes and peacocks. Can you imagine what Solomon's court must have been like? Must have been as Spruce Meadows' slogan says it, a most international place. With everything that he brought back, but for 3 years he didn't know whether his business ventures, his trading ventures would be successful. But then he sees the ships coming out on the Mediterranean, and he knows that he's been rewarded, or down on the Red Sea. We might say it this way, nothing ventured, nothing gained. You say, well, that sounds a whole lot like Arrogant Andy. No, it's different, and we'll see how it's different. Business, life, the future sometimes looks risky, but Solomon is reminding us that no matter how cautious you are, life always involves some risk. There are risks inherent to life. It's meaning, future is uncertain. You won't know whether your ships will come back with a successful mission unless you send them out. And if it looks like a wise idea, you've thought through it, send them out. Cast your bread on the surface of the waters. Why? Because you may find it after many days. You're not guaranteed, but you might. You're not guaranteed a profit on your business ventures, but your ships may come back with a profit. So he says in verse 2, he says, divide your portion to 7 or to 8, for you do not know what misfortune may occur on the earth. This Hebrew literary device of a number plus one more, Solomon's not saying, I'm going to send out 8 ships and no more, no 9 ships going out. The point is he's referring to an indefinitely large number. Whatever wisdom would suggest, he says, do it in that time. I think he's talking about being diverse in investing. We might say, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Why? He says, because you do not know what evil or disaster is the idea of that word evil here. You do not know what disaster, calamity may happen on the earth. We know that all too well, don't we? Up till about 2001 here in North America, we thought we were just king of the world, and in many respects we were. And God subtly reminded us that we're not in control. So he says, take a long-term perspective of life. I think that's his point. If you just look to today, you're going to be overly cautious and you're going to make mistakes. You may relax into inactivity like idle Ian. You may be like timid Tina and you may retreat into fear, isolate yourself in fear. Why? Because the future is unknown and I don't know if I'm going to succeed or not. And God says, that's true, you don't. So live life wisely. He says, wisely live with this long-term view. And this is going to keep coming up over and over in chapter 11 and 12. Look to the future. Look to the future. There's a judgment coming. You're going to get old someday. You don't know what's going to happen, so live wisely today because the future is coming. Live with a long-term view. In business, yes, but in the spiritual life as well. You need to, in your spiritual life, you need to look at your life and you say, okay, if I'm going to continue to grow in godliness and in 5 or 10 years I'm going to be a spiritually mature believer, what do I need to do today? Wisely live with a long-term view, even though you don't know the future. This has to dominate your parenting philosophy as well. Well, I can't take any risk with my kids. And obviously, some parents just let their kids do whatever they want. And Solomon says in Proverbs, a child left to himself brings his parents shame. There are some kids that are running wild, and they do need to be cooped up in their backyard with a very big fence. But there are also parents who go to the other extreme and try to so isolate their children from any kind of danger. And I'm not talking about putting them in the place of temptation. I'm just talking about inherent risks of life. Be wise, but remember, you can't control the future. So live with a long-term perspective. So if you want your kids, by the time they get married or leave your home, if you want your kids, by God's grace, to be spiritually mature, you can't control that. But you can make wise choices to prepare for the future with a long-term in view. Let me ask you, parents, the rate you're going, will your kids be ready to be out on their own before God if things continue in their home as the way they are? He says, wisely look to the future with a long-term view, with the reminder that you don't know the future. You don't know whether your ship will come back with success, but you need to wisely prepare. Secondly, in verse 3, he says, if the clouds are full, they pour out rain upon the earth. Whether a tree falls towards the south or toward the north, wherever the tree falls, there it lies. He says, when the clouds get filled up, they empty rain on the earth. And we say, for sure, I can see it coming. I see the storm coming on the horizon. See the thunderstorm gathering? What's the point? Solomon is saying, you may be able to see the storm coming, you may be able to even predict what's going to happen next, but you can't stop it. Okay, clouds, stop. That doesn't work. We say, of course it doesn't work. That's absurd, and that's what Solomon is saying. It's absurd to think that we can control what goes on around us. He says, if a tree falls towards the south or towards the north, this is a literary device, Hebrew literary device, that we would say something like from coast to coast, from Vancouver to Halifax, so from west to east and everything in between. He's saying wherever a tree falls on the earth, whatever direction it falls, whether it's towards the north or the south, wherever it falls, we can't stop it. And not only knowing we can't stop it, beyond that, we don't even know whether it's going to fall. We were with some friends in the church the other day on Friday when the wind was just a howling. And shortly before we got to their house, a big branch came off a poplar. And they couldn't predict that. They had no idea it was going to fall. It's unpredictable. It's also out of our control. The place where the tree falls, there is. It's almost like the cliche that's so popular today, it is what it is. What does that mean? Well, I think it means where the tree falls, there it lays. It's going to happen and you can't stop it. This isn't a fatalism. He's just reminding us that life is so unpredictable. How many of you thought you would be here today 20 years ago? We don't even know where we're going to be next year. So how do we live? Do we live in fear like timid teens? Are we immobilized? Do we retreat into inactivity because of the fear of the unknown or the despair? Do we just go to pleasure? Do we get angry about it? Do we tighten the reins and try and grab control back? Do we despair? What do? Verse 4, he says, he who watches the wind will not sow, and he who looks at the clouds will not reap. So you say, oh, may not be a good day for sowing today, so I'm not going to do it. Retreat into inactivity. Oh, looks like Clouds are gathering. I better not reap today. It's risky. I don't know what's going to happen. Solomon is saying that things very well may go wrong. Your party may get rained on, but he says that's life. If you live in the fear of the future because it's out of your control, then you will be immobilized. You'll be like timid Tina or idle Ian. After all, why do anything about the future if you don't know how it will turn out? I might be a failure. But folks, if we wait till we understand everything about the future or can't control it, we'll miss opportunities for service today. Solomon's not primarily concerned about people planting their crops at the right time. He's primarily concerned about people living wisely in the fear of God, in their homes, in their walk with God, in their workplace. He says in verse 5, just as you don't know the path of the wind and how bones are formed in the womb of a pregnant woman. You notice that phrase again, you do not know. It's the key phrase of these six verses. It shows up 4 times. He keeps driving it home like a hammer pounding a nail into wood. He says, you don't know, you don't know, you don't know, you don't know. I don't know what. Well, here he says, you do not know the path of the wind. The word translated wind in English in Hebrew can also mean spirit. So he may be talking about our spirits, very possible. But I think this is a pretty good translation here. He says, you don't know the path of the wind. I mean, how many of you could explain the wind currents? I couldn't. With modern day science, they can try and guess and make some educated guesses and get close, but they don't understand it all. And yet wind is something that we experience here on the prairies pretty much every day. One of the most common experiences of life we don't even understand. How about another common experience of life? How a baby grows in the belly of a pregnant woman. We don't understand exactly how that works. And in Solomon's day, it was even a more of a mystery than it is today. And these are some of the most frequently occurring events in the world. And if we're honest, we say, I can't control it and I don't even understand most of it. So what do prospective parents do? Well, I don't understand what's going on, so let's not make any preparation for the future. No, a wise mom and dad, even though they don't understand how the baby is formed, they will still make wise choices for the future. The unknown doesn't immobilize them or anger them or cause them to despair. The unknown forces them to trust. Lord, I don't understand how this process works of you making a baby. I don't understand how the wind works. I don't understand everything about our spirit. But I do know who's in control. The uncertainties of life don't immobilize us. They force us to decide to trust. So he says, secondly, he says, wisely work hard even though you can't control the future. Timid Tina and idle Ian miss it. They recognize that the future is out of their control. They recognize that they don't understand everything about life, but they respond inappropriately. He says the wise response is to work hard even though you can't control the future. But then there's a third response here of the long-term view, a third aspect of the long-term view, the end of verse 5. And he's really hitting on the key issue now. He says, you do not know the activity of God who makes all things. You do not know. You don't fully understand. You know a little bit, but you don't grasp it. If we can't understand even the basic things of life, like the wind or how a baby is formed in the belly of a mother, how are we going to understand all the works and thoughts of an all-powerful, infinite God? He's so far beyond us, it's not even funny. The wind is simple in comparison to God. And he says, we don't understand what God is doing in the world other than what he's revealed to us in the Scripture. So just like the pregnant lady who has to trust the Lord to protect her baby through a process that she hardly understands, so Christians have to trust God even though they don't understand a lot of what He's doing. You see the point Solomon's making? Third point he makes, the third aspect of this long-term view, is that you have to wisely trust God even though you don't understand everything about what He's doing. That's life. Well, if I could understand it, then I would do it. If God would just explain to me what He's up to, then I would follow in obedience. Job learned that lesson, didn't he? God doesn't owe us an explanation. He just wants our trust. Many times in our lives, we don't know the future. We don't know what's going to happen. We can't wait until we know all about the future to step out. If we wait, then we'll miss opportunities to express trust and dependence on God. So what do we do? Verse 6. He goes back to the second aspect of long-term view, and he says, sow your seed in the morning. Don't be idle in the evening, because you don't know whether morning or evening sowing will succeed or whether both of them alike will be good. The word idle here literally in the Hebrew says rest your hand. Fold your hands across your chest and just take it easy like idle Ian. Why? Because I don't know whether it's going to succeed or not. I might fail, so why bother? Why not enjoy life? He says, work hard all day. Don't be inactive or idle. Put in a good day's work. Why? He says, because you don't know. Again, you don't know whether this or that will be successful. A farmer could sit back and do nothing because he didn't know whether it would be better to plant in the morning or the night. He would be immobilized by uncertainty. But he says, the idea of this morning or night is work hard all day. Work in your fields all day because you don't know what will be the best. We don't know the future, but we can work hard today and trust the results into God's good hand. Sometimes we wait for the perfect opportunity. All right, I'll share the gospel with this person when the perfect opportunity comes. Does the perfect opportunity usually come? No, it doesn't. So we never share the gospel. I do this too. I want a really good opportunity where it's just perfect. And we sit back and we wait for the perfect opportunity and it doesn't happen. Or there's sin that needs to be addressed maybe in the lives of one of our kids or somebody that God has placed us in authority over. Okay, I'm going to wait for the perfect opportunity. Everybody's happy and feeling good, and then I'll address the issue. Well, when everybody's happy and feeling good, you don't want to mess that up. So you don't address it. Well, then when they're feeling bad and not acting appropriately, well, now's not a good time. Heard it defined this way by another preacher. What's a good time to do what God has asked us to do? Anytime it's not a genuinely bad time. That leaves a lot of opportunity for doing right. Sometimes procrastinators, they sit back and say, well, it's not quite the perfect time to get started on this project, and so they never do it. Either because of laziness or maybe perfectionism. I can't do it up to my standards, and if I can't do it up to my standards, I'm not going to do it at all. And so they retreat into inactivity because they don't have the control that they want. A good time is any time that's not a genuinely bad time. One writer puts it this way. The life of faith, in other words, being a believer, doesn't remove the problem of our ignorance. Rather, it enables us to live with it. Unbelievers are going to resort to one of these seven responses or maybe other ones that you can think of. They're going to resort to that because what else are they going to do? They don't have a God in heaven who takes care of the birds. At least not one that they know. So we're not surprised when an unbeliever plunges to anger or to despair or to living for pleasure. But it should be a surprise to us when we respond this way because we know better. God has told us we're not in control. We don't know the future. So instead of anger or despair or inactivity or pride or control and manipulation, he says, just humbly depend on me. That's Solomon's point. You work hard and you leave the results up to God. He's talking about total commitment to obey God. I may be walking through the forest and God may allow that tree to fall right on my head. And if he does, that's okay. Or I may be planting seed in the morning and it doesn't work at all and I look like a total failure. That's okay. Be totally committed to obey God. Trust him. Because even when I don't understand life, I do know who is supervising it. Even when I don't understand life, I do know who is supervising it. And if that doesn't reassure my soul, then I don't know God very well. A wise person lives in humble dependence. The first way to respond to the uncertainties of life that Solomon has raised in the book of Ecclesiastes is not to retreat into inactivity, not to get lazy or angry or despair. I'm going to force my way through it. I can do this. He says, work hard as you trust God with the future. I think of the Rodman family this week, how their world was turned upside down as Joel and Greg's cousin and family were on their way somewhere. I'm not sure where they were headed to. But on one of those country roads, not far from where we have the men's retreat up near Alex, and from what I understand, a van didn't stop at a stop sign, ran it, collided with Joel's cousin's car, Colin and Leanne. And Colin, a 37-year-old believer, was killed. And their 10-month-old baby was rushed, I assume airlifted down here to the Children's Hospital. And a couple days later passed away. And in about an hour, they're going to be having the funeral for Colin up in Wetaskiwin, I believe. Put yourself in Leanne's shoes, though it's hard to do, but let's try and do this. Put yourself in Leanne's shoes. You've just lost your husband at 37. You've just lost your 10-month-old baby. You're fully confident that they're both with the Lord. But how do you respond? A lot of people would turn to timid Tinas, wouldn't they? Well, I'm never going to drive again because I can't control what other cars do and if I'm not in control. Other people would get really intense, and I'm gonna control the situation here, and I'm gonna set my boundaries in, and nobody's gonna violate these boundaries that I've set up for myself, and if they do, they better watch out. Other people would isolate themselves because of fear. Some would go idle and inactivity. Well, what's the point if God's gonna do this to me? Some people would get arrogant and say, this isn't gonna ruin me. I'm going to prove to people that I can get through this. Other people would get angry and say, God, this isn't fair. Other people would despair, say, what's the point? You see how easy it is to respond to the uncertainties and lack of control over life with any response that's unbiblical. I want to ask you this morning, which character do you tend to resort to when faced with the uncertainties of life? Which will Leanne, Colin's wife, widow, which will she resort to? I hope it'll be the one Solomon advises. The one who wisely works hard while entrusting the future to a God who loves her. That's the only response that works. Would you bow your head, please? Do we have any idle Ians in here this morning? You've retreated into inactivity. You've gone lazy. Do we have any timid Tinas who are living in fear of the unknown? Do we have any arrogant Andes that are going to push on in pride and they're going to make it work? They're going to succeed. They're going to prove people wrong. Your parents who got a divorce when you were kids and your dad told you you'd never make anything of your life, you're going to prove him wrong. Or your wife who left you and you're going to show her that she made a mistake. You're going to push on in pride. Maybe angry Adams lashing out in anger at God and other people and the bitterness that's eating you up because you recognize you're not in control and you don't like God's control. Or manipulating Michelles who are going to be the boss. I'm going to have my boundaries and nobody's going to violate. I'm going to manipulate people to get what I want. I'll get angry, I'll use tears, I'll do whatever I have to. Tight fist, I'm going to get what I want. I'm going to be in control. God's not going to take control away from me. Or maybe pleasure Pete's. Let's just have fun. Let's just enjoy hobbies. Let's just live on vacation. Let's just get the most out of life that we can. Or maybe depressed Daisies. I'm not in control. I don't know the future, and I don't like it, and there's no point. There's no hope. My friends, you may have walked in characterized by one of these this morning, but you don't have to walk out the same way. Because the God who's in control says, confess, repent, and then trust. Humbly depend. Why humbly depend? Because humble dependence always receives God's grace. And that's the only way you can make it through the uncertainties of life. My friend, don't let the uncertainties of life drive you to sinful responses, but let the uncertainties and your lack of control over life drive you to humbly depend and trust in the Lord. As Isaiah plays, please respond to the Lord in your heart. In a humble, trusting, dependent way. Lord, we have to honestly admit, first of all, that we're not in control and that we don't understand much about life. But even when we don't understand much about life, we do know as believers who's supervising it. So help us not to run from Him, but to run to Him. Because He's our good shepherd. And with His blessing, we'll have everything that we need. In Jesus' name.